You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org. Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein, very happy to spend the next hour with you talking about outdoor topics. We've got Tony Peterson for the second week in a row. Probably looking ahead to turkey hunting a little bit with him. Also, Sharon Staitler, the bird chick, will be with us. Next week, I think Dean Bortz is going to join the show. Dean, the editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, joins us, well, at least once a year. I know we're bearing down on their spring hearings over there, and we'll probably talk to Dean about that and some other topics over in the Badger State. I'm going to kick this week's show off with the one and only Tim Lesmeister. Tim, good to see you. Thanks for joining me. And we both got press releases from the DNR pointing out that bears are waking up, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm seeing them on my trail cameras now. I have trail cameras up on Madeline Island, up on Lake Superior. And I usually don't see that many bears this early, but surprisingly, they are showing up on my trail cameras. My neighbor says that he's going to have to start to keep his bird feeders inside. Now he's going to have to take them out of commission because the bears, they just literally tear down the bird feeders this time of year, and they just chew up everything that's inside of them. I used to have a place up on northern Wisconsin in Herbster. This was back in the late 80s. And this time of year, if you didn't have your garbage cans really well protected, you could count on the bears finding those and getting into them. And another thing that people do that's just crazy is they feed their dogs outside. And that's not crazy most of the time, but it's crazy right now. Because those bears will find that dog food. They'll sniff that out. And your dog will then be competing with mama black bear. And it's not a pretty sight.
Yeah, competing with all kinds of creatures. I had a coworker here who had an opossum in their garage this past week. I mean, everything's up and moving around. And bears are just, they got the best nose in the woods, right? We've talked about that before in terms of their predation on deer and moose. If you got a grill out, or if you got, you know, bird feeders, you know, that this is really the time. If you're in bear country, you got to bring that bird feeder in, or, you know, just plan on a bear tearing it down and consuming all the seed. They get moving, their metabolism gets going, and they're hungry. I mean, they're moving, eating machines. Be bear wise is what the DNR is saying this time of year. And, you know, it is unseasonably warm. I mean, we had almost 80 in the Twin Cities last weekend, Tim. We had a 70 degree day middle of this past week. I'm seeing 50s and 60s almost every day moving forward. I put a crappie on the front cover of this week's Outdoor News talking about ice out crappies, because we've got open water in a good chunk of the southern portion of the state where guys can get out and pursue ice out crappies already. And that ice line is moving north quickly.
You know, the bears right now don't have a lot to eat. There's not a lot out there for them to forage on. And they'll go after just about anything and try to get at it any way they can. I had a friend up in north central Minnesota last year who used to keep his garbage, his trash, out in his garage. And he realized the bears had come out of hibernation when he walked out one day and saw that his garage door, his big main garage door, one of the sections had literally been ripped off. And so the bear could get access into the garage and had just tore through two bags of garbage and just literally ate everything. So you have to be real, real careful right now with any kind of food items and trash, whatever, bird feeders, dog food, anything that you're storing outside that's edible, because the bears will find it.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline with Tim Lesmeister kicking off this week's broadcast. I think probably the big story this week, Tim, was the DNR released the results of their moose survey. That occurred in late January. Yeah, actually, over most of the month of January, they were out with helicopters flying at, 200, 300 feet over the dense forest up there in northeastern Minnesota, trying to do their annual moose survey. There's a lot of room for error in that moose survey. I forget what the percentage is. I've seen that number before. It's well over doubled. It's like 20-30%, I think. But nonetheless, the report did show an increase in moose numbers from 2025, and that's a good thing.
They had great conditions this year for scouting those moose. A lot of snow on the ground, and they get together, the Minnesota DNR gets together with the tribal biologists, and they go out there and they look for these moose. And I think it's a good sign. It looks like they're going to do another tagging study. Did you see that?
That's underway. Yeah, with the calf moose. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the calf moose. I mean, they do so many. They should just put a collar on every moose.
So last year's survey, I looked it up, was just over 4,000 moose. This 2026 survey, the DNR is saying 4,470 moose, an 11% increase from last year. Like I say, there's a fair amount of room for error in this survey. Although, to Tim's point, they had good conditions for surveying moose this winter. That's still well down from that northeast population peak, I guess you would call it, of about 8,000 in 2009. I mean, it really, really plunged there for several years. The good news seems to be that for most of the past decade, Tim, it's been stable, kind of in that high 3,000 to low 4,000 range, to the point that, as we've discussed, some of the bands are already, you know, implemented some harvest up there. I don't know what they're taking, a total of maybe 30 moose a year, 30 bulls.
Yeah, they are. And I think that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's just fine as long as this moose population is stable. I'd say harvest some. I wish they'd get out some permits to just the regular hunters, because it would generate some cash for some more moose studying.
The press release from the DNR seemed to use pretty strong language, like moose population still at risk, you know, really emphasizing that, hey, it's still not necessarily good for moose. Part of me wondered, Tim, if that was a little bit of a response to some of the growing call for state moose permits. The bands are taking, I don't know how many permits, probably close to 50 or 60. They're killing like 30 moose. And if the bands can do it, you know, you're talking about a tribal population up there of, I don't know, 20,000, 25,000. If the bands get all those, why can't, you know, the other 5 million of us in the state of Minnesota get a crack at 10 or 15 permits also? I don't know. There's probably some folks in the DNR that don't want to deal with it, right? They don't want to put together a moose season. They don't want to have to justify it to the bands, blah, blah, blah. And so I do wonder if there's a little bit of pushback from the agency and a little bit about the tone of the release to remind everyone that, ooh, hey, moose are still in trouble. Yeah, boy, look out for those guys that are talking like we need a moose season. I think fair is fair. If the bands can take 30, the state certainly should be able to take some moose too. The population has been stable. I wrote about this in my column last fall. Dave Trauba, the new DNR wildlife manager, said it's something he believes we should consider. The big game biologist also talked to me about it. She made the point that the moose plan calls for like 5 years of increase before you could talk about a moose season. It's unlikely you're going to see that, but even she acknowledged to me that, you know, the plan didn't really think ahead of, you know, what happens when the population just kind of reaches a new stability level of around 4,000. You probably could tolerate some hunting with that too. She told me, you know, she understands why hunters would feel that way. So that's kind of a long explanation for me saying that I think we need a moose season, and I think the DNR needs to play ball with us on it.
Yeah, I agree. We can take some of the bulls out of the population and still maintain the numbers that we have right now easily. You're right. It's just a case where anytime you make any changes in the government agency, it always takes a lot of time. We'll see. I have my fingers crossed, but I'm not confident that it's going to happen in the near future.
There's a lot of snow still in northeastern Minnesota, although I got to think it's melting quickly. That's not necessarily good for deer, but it's a good thing for moose, because this is the time of year that the winter ticks drop off the moose. And if they drop off on snow, they die. If they drop off on the bare ground, they survive to propagate and become a problem for next winter's moose. So it's actually good to have a, you know, pretty decent little snowpack up there in northeastern Minnesota if you like moose. You know, we were looking at some of the winter severity index numbers, which we'll probably report in the next week or two. Most of the state, of course, WSI readings are nil. But in the Northeast, they've had a couple, you know, strong, big snowstorms that put a lot of snowpack down on the ground. And so those WSI readings are creeping up in the Northeast. I still don't think they're severe. And with the warmer temperatures, you're not going to add days for cold, but you still might add some days up there for snow depth. WSI is a combination of snow depths and cold weather.
Well, snow depth is a lot bigger hindrance for deer than it is for moose.
Right. Tim, I think we're out of time for this segment. You'll stick around and we'll talk to you at the end of the show.
Sounds good.
All right. That was our buddy Tim Lesmeister. Thank you to him. Let's grab a break. I think we'll be back with Tony Peterson when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory length enforcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Unleash the power of the Onyx Hunt app this turkey season and see how it'll become one of the best tools in your turkey vest. Use color-coded public and private land ownership information, tree species, and crop layers to scout from the comfort of your home. Then hit the field using compass mode, waypoints, and multiple base maps to help pin down more gobblers this spring. Use promo code ODN20 to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again. Then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Gerisline. We're here for another segment. Tony Peterson joining us for the second week in a row. You can read Tony at themeateater.com. Hope you like the content of our discussions here. If so, call us at 800-535-5191, and you can subscribe to Outdoor News, either our print or digital versions, or do that at outdoornews.com. Tony, we're into our last full weekend of March. That means we're just, what, a couple weeks away from the turkey hunting season here in Minnesota.
It's coming up close, man. I can't wait.
Some states, the season's already underway farther south. Do you ever go and hunt some of those earlier seasons?
I'm heading out very, very soon to go bow hunt turkeys in Nebraska. And I almost always try to find one state that I can go to before the Minnesota opener here in mid-April. So, yeah, I love the I love those early hunts.
We got four subspecies of turkeys. What are you hunting in Nebraska? Those Easterns or Rios or Merriams?
Where I'm going to be hunting them, they're probably going to be a hybrid between the Rios and the Easterns, where I'm going to be at. But, you know, Nebraska's weird because Nebraska has three of the subspecies.
Okay.
And you can be in the northern, I've hunted the northern part of the state, northeastern, north central a lot, where you should be dealing with just Easterns. And you'll call in birds, and you might call in three toms at the same time, and one of them will have a pure white band that looks just like a Merriam, and one of them will have like a darker band that looks like an Eastern, and then one of them will have that yellow band that looks like a Rio, and you're like, I don't know what they are, but I see that a lot in Nebraska, and it's pretty cool.
Are there any subtleties in how you approach hunting the different subspecies, Easterns versus Merriams versus Rios, or is it all kind of the same?
You know, their behavior's different. Rios and Merriams definitely gobble more throughout the day, and they're a little bit easier to get fired up. Easterns tend to get a little more tight-lipped, especially after they fly down. But you don't, I don't know, I hunt them exactly the same. Especially on a trip like that, I go sit all day and work them, and I don't really treat them any different than I would a, you know, Eastern hunt back home here.
Now, when you're scouting, when you're on the road, you probably can't scout quite the same way you would for local birds here in Minnesota or Wisconsin. You had a piece in a recent Outdoor News where you were talking about using trail cameras for turkey scouting. I think everybody associates those devices with deer hunting and scouting for white-tailed deer. You made a strong case that you should be using your trail cameras to track turkeys too.
It's a pretty incredible way to keep tabs on them. And I do that a lot here at home because I'm hunting small properties with my daughters. And a lot of them I just can't glass. And running trail cameras allows you to really pattern those birds. So if I, you know, especially in the early part of the season, once it kicks open, if I'm gonna pull them out of school, I want to know when those toms are probably going to come through, or when, you know, when it's more likely you're going to get that movement window. And trail cameras can be incredible. You know, it's like you said, it's a different game when I head out of state and I'm hunting public land somewhere. And I, you know, obviously you don't have any scouting reports to go off of, so you have to figure things out in the moment. But using cameras here at home has been real fun.
When you're scouting whitetails with a camera, I mean, it's valuable information, but whitetails, they've got a bigger home range than turkeys do, don't they? Or am I wrong? If you're seeing turkeys on trail cameras, can you be pretty confident those birds are going to be in that general area for a while?
Yeah, I think turkeys are way more patternable than deer. Okay. And I don't know enough about a turkey home range, I guess, to say that it's much different from a deer. You know, I could see them kind of calling a section home, I guess. Trail cameras for deer for me are often just a confidence builder in a spot. You know, like I don't run them a ton, but if I do, it's usually because I'm like, okay, which place am I going to spend 3 or 4 days sitting all day during the rut or something? Where do I have the most confidence? With turkeys, if you get, you know, you get that flock of hens with a couple toms trailing, they go by at 10 o'clock in the morning today. If those conditions don't change, those birds will probably come through the next day and the next day, unless somebody messes with them. And so you can really get a dial on them, or you can see some birds will start cruising. You know, like you'll get the same tom at noon every day in a spot. It's pretty crazy how patternable they are.
Given the winter that we're coming out of, which I don't know how you'd classify this winter, Tony. It's kind of up and down. I mean, we had some major thaws that were probably good for the wildlife, deer and turkeys alike. We had a cold snap there in mid-March, which felt like the absolute dead of winter, between a lot of snow and some, you know, pretty serious cold temperatures, well below normal. Now, then it blew up. Now we're back to, you know, well above normal here this week or this past weekend. You know, given all that, do you factor that, you know, the winter weather into your hunting tactics, or, you know, are the birds just kind of going to do their thing no matter how much snow is on the ground or how cold it is?
I do factor it in, because if even, you know, mid-April here, if we're dealing with real cold weather, those birds will act like winter flocks, at least for the first part of the day. And, you know, like I mentioned, hunting Nebraska in the early season a lot, and sometimes you're down there in the end of March and you're dealing with these winter flocks. What I see when it's cold is those birds are, you know, the hens are calories first, right? They're going to go somewhere where they can eat right away off the roost. They can catch some sun if it's going to come out. And they might do that for 3, 4, 5 hours. And those toms are just there. Like, they're not cruising. But I have a really good success rate hunting like late afternoon in the early season when it's cold, because I think those toms finally just decide to go cruising and get callable. And so a lot of those traditional try to get one off the roost type of hunts, you know, hunt first couple hours of the day, I don't do very well on those when it's really cold a lot of times, unless you're right on that food source. But if you want a callable bird, later in the day is often a really good time to be out there.
Gosh, Tony, you remember back in the day when you had to cut off your hunting at noon?
Yep.
It doesn't
and
seem
you had
that long
5 days to hunt.
it was a long time ago. I mean, that's probably been gone for 20 years, I would think. Are there any states that still, you know, do that? You were telling me last week that Minnesota tends to be, you know, more cautious than other states. We were probably one of the last states to still have that in place.
Yeah, I know that Missouri, if you hunt public land, you can still only hunt till 1 o'clock. They just changed the rule. So Missouri was always till 1 in the afternoon and then you were done. And this, I think it was this year they changed it where if you're on private land, you can hunt till sunset. But if you're on public, you can still only hunt till 1.
And as we were talking last week about some of the states where everyone's nervous about turkey numbers, that includes the state of Missouri,
right?
Where I believe they've restricted non-residents. I wrote in my column, I forget what did they limit hunters to just one bird? Was that the deal?
Yeah. So I just wrote about this too. In Missouri, if you want, you can pay $304.50 and hunt one turkey throughout their season as a non-resident, but the residents can pay $19 and kill two still. So I don't know how much of a, I don't know how much that was for the resource.
Wow.
Versus just being the kind of trend of, you know, you can do this to non-residents and what are they going to do about it kind of thing. But I'm really curious to see what the license sale situation looks like down there, because the reason that I figured that out is I was looking to go down there and I'm like, I'm not paying $305 for a tag. And then I would be hunting public land. So I'm like, I'm only going to hunt half days and it's just not worth it.
That's incredible. I didn't know that number, that it was that high for a non-resident turkey tag down there.
I wrote about that and I was like, this can't be for the resource, because for the price of me killing one bird down there, you know, the residents can kill 30, you know, on the same, for the same amount of license revenue. That's a hard limit for me. I'll pay up for a lot of tags because I'm pretty used to it. But I'm just wondering how much we're going to see of this now. You know, we see it out west a lot, and it's Midwest, East, and South now where, you know, the non-resident prices are going up and people are really getting limited. And I wonder what that's going to do to, you know, traveling hunting long term. Like I feel like people are going to hit their limit.
I would think so. I don't know who these guys are, these young guys that can afford these elk tags out west, but yeah, more power to them if they can. But $300 for a turkey, come on. That's outer limits. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Driesline with Tony Peterson wrapping up this segment. Tony, before we let you go, so again, we're about two and a half weeks out from the first turkey season here in Minnesota with Wisconsin coming up too. What should guys be doing right now in terms of scouting, in terms of getting ready? Should they obviously practicing their calling? We're talking about guys hunting these states, not traveling south like you are.
Right. If you're going to hunt out of a blind, get it out. You know, the days of turkeys, like really accepting a blind being popped up anywhere are kind of over, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely a danger association to that with a lot of turkeys.
Oh.
And so, I mean, that's one of the reasons I like running trail cameras and getting out there and scouting and glassing is I can get right on where those birds want to be. And if you have that blind set up and brushed in, you know, 2 weeks ahead of time and you're where they're going to want to be, they're so callable, you know, and we used to just go real mobile, right? You go run and gun and put your back to a tree, but a lot of people are on small spots now. And you go out and a lot of the places I hunt are like 25 acres and you're just not going to run and gun that. And so it's a different game, but getting blinds out now and getting out there and figuring things out a little bit helps a lot for those early seasons.
Yeah. Blinds have gotten very popular the past 20 years. And, you know, with younger hunters, you know, guys like you taking your daughters out. You're telling me the turkeys have kind of evolved to understand that an obnoxious blind might mean danger.
Yeah, man. You know, when those boys at Double Bull figured that out, you could put a blind out anywhere. You know, I mean, they just didn't understand it. And now, you know, it feels like they kind of do, you know, and it's not to say you couldn't do that and kill birds because they're still turkeys, but I play it safe now.
Well, it's not too late to go get prepared for turkey hunting. I mean, it's not like the old days, and the old days weren't that long ago in terms of having to apply for a tag. Now it's over the counter for almost the entire season. You can buy an archery tag for the entire season. That's gotten more popular. And as I wrote in my column a couple weeks ago, Tony, you can use any bow using your regular 7-day license. There was something on the DNR website that suggested that wasn't true, that you could only use a crossbow. That's not correct. You can use any vertical bow under your regular license in addition to buying that season-long archery tag. It's a very accessible season now.
Big time.
Well, Tony, thanks for joining me, man. Hope you have a good safe travels. We'll talk to you maybe getting into the summer and find out how your turkey season went.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Rob.
Thanks. That's our buddy Tony Peterson. Read him at themeateater.com. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
You fish the same waters year after year, but what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Did you know 22 Americans die each day waiting for organ transplants, most of them for kidneys? The good news is that MatchingDonors.com is helping to change that. MatchingDonors.com is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that links organ donors with people in desperate need of kidneys and other transplants. And now you don't need to donate a kidney to save a life. You can donate your boat, car, or real estate, with 100% of the proceeds going to help save the lives of people needing organ transplants. Visit MatchingDonors.com or call 800-385-0422.
Welcome back, everybody. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Jerisaline with you here for another segment. Thanks for tuning in. Check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you would like to subscribe to our print or digital versions. Again, you can also do that at outdoornews.com. Our friend Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, is joining us now. Have not spoken to her yet in 2026. It's good to have her with us. Sharon, thank you for joining me for a segment this week and next week.
Has it really been all this first time? We waited till March?
Almost April. Yeah. I try not to overuse my guests. I appreciate you folks carving out personal time to talk to me on the show. And so I try not to abuse that as best I can. So anyway, hey, migration really, really rolling, correct?
Oh, yes. I have been so happy. The red-winged blackbirds are back singing away. Great blue herons are here. Robins, which we've had all winter, but they've now pivoted to singing their spring territory song. So I'm just happy as a clam.
It was early February, I believe. I went into the city. I went down to Eat Street. I was walking around down there one morning to grab some donuts and in some shrubberies. Yeah, there were several robins like fighting. And my wife was with me and I was like, yeah, it's like all my birding friends say, robins are here pretty much year round.
Yeah, well, buckthorn helps.
Okay.
Yeah, they eat a lot of buckthorn. They also, you'll see them around areas where there's open water and they'll toss leaves looking for invertebrates. I've seen them go after bait fish, you know, if people have dumped those when they're out ice fishing. It's really weird to see a robin carrying a small fish.
And that's why we talk about red-winged blackbirds now being more of an official sign of spring. And they've been here a while.
Yeah.
I was picking up sticks after that big wind in my yard on Saturday the 14th, right before we got that big snow.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just cackling. There were dozens of them, it seemed like, around this pond behind my home. And the pond was still mostly frozen.
Yeah.
But those red-winged blackbirds were going crazy. What were they doing?
They kind of follow open water as they come back north. And so the older, more experienced birds are usually the ones that come back first to try and get that prime territory. Because, yeah, I had one on the wetland behind my home about a week before we had that blizzard. And, yeah, I heard them out there singing like crazy. And then the next day I had about 40 of them out there singing and setting up territory. And they're going to do this for weeks because the females aren't back yet. So they're just getting everything established now.
And then that big snow hit on the 15th. And what do? Do they just hunker down and survive that? I mean, like you say, they're here for open water. I know some people who had bird feeders who said the bird feeders early that week here, I guess it's going on a couple weeks ago now, their feeders were just full of red-winged blackbirds.
Oh, yeah. So I saw all the red-winged blackbirds that were in my wetland. They all formed this massive flock. And they were sitting in the tree. And they're still singing the Conqueror song, clustered together. But they were also hitting any bird feeder they could possibly find.
So, as we were saying, red-winged blackbirds are a true sign of spring. That means you've got some open water cooking. And that certainly has accelerated here in the past week, right, when we had almost 80 degrees last weekend and we had a 60s a day or two here this past week. So, migration's rolling along. Now, you mentioned herons. Now, those are pretty hardcore fish eaters, right? So they got to have open water.
They do. And the rookery that's here in downtown Minneapolis or just north of downtown Minneapolis, it has quite a few great blue herons and quite a few double crested cormorants. And, you know, that I've witnessed more than once at that rookery where we've had an April snowstorm and they're still, some of them will stay hunkered on the nest if they already have eggs. Quite a bit of them will just kind of hang out on shore, maybe questioning their life choices. But herons, like red-winged blackbirds, they're hardy birds. They can take a little bit of snow.
Tell us what's unfolding here migration-wise now, what to expect as we get into the last couple days of March and get into early April. What's coming next?
We're going to start having a big sparrow changeover. So we're going to start getting fox sparrows coming in, or like I like to call the kicking sparrows. Those are the ones that go under your feeder and they're kind of kicking stuff around looking for what they like to eat. So, and once you have fox sparrows, white-throated sparrows aren't too far behind. You'll start to see a big influx of juncos as they move north. And then towards the end of April, they'll taper out as they head into northern Minnesota and Canada and Alaska to their breeding grounds. Kinglets will be coming through. And then mid-April, we should start to see our first warbler, the yellow-rumped warbler. Maybe some people will start seeing pine warblers. That's another hardy bird. Those are both birds that'll pop up at feeders sometimes, and they'll go for suet if it gets too cold when they get back.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline, chatting with our friend Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, a little bit about spring migration, which is really rolling along. It's definitely underway, full tilt. Now, we talked about robins that winter here year round. There are also migratory robins, right, that come through and are heading to Canada. Is that right?
Yeah. So the robins that we see here in the wintertime aren't necessarily the robins that are running around on our lawns in the summer. There is some seasonal movement, but Yeah. So, and so you can have these days, especially around a snowstorm, where you have robins coming back on territory and robins who haven't left yet, and everybody is just angry and fighting each other.
Yeah, they do seem surly. Sometimes those robins that I see, we've talked about that in the past. Bluebirds are also darn near year-round residents these mm-hmm. days, right? They're already back.
Yeah, I was going to Coon Rapids to do a bird program. And yeah, I saw bluebirds along the Mississippi River as I was driving up there. That was pretty cool to see. Yeah, some overwinter in southern Minnesota. I know some people who put out mealworms for them and they'll hang out. But if they can find enough food and there's a good cavity for them to roost in at night, they'll spend the winter here.
While I was out on that March 14th, picking up sticks, looking at the red-winged blackbirds, my neighbor came out and he and I were chatting. He was all excited about building a bluebird box. He said he wanted to put a bluebird box out to try to get bluebirds in the neighborhood. And I told him, you know, we both have some big trees in our backyard adjacent to this pond. I associate more with, like I say, red-winged blackbird kind of habitat. And there's just a lot of big trees in our neighborhood. And I suggested to him he might have a hard time getting bluebirds in our backyard because of that. I suggested maybe go find a golf course or something to put it up. He looked at me like I probably didn't know what I was talking about. But I'm curious, what do you make of that? Are backyard bluebird boxes usually kind of a challenge?
They can be. I mean, bluebirds, they do like golf courses and open fields, but I've seen them in oak savanna too. So it's kind of like there could be a few tall trees, but it's mostly an open area. And the thing with the bluebird box is it's a bigger hole. It's a bigger nest entrance. So he can put it up and maybe a bluebird will pass through, but chickadees could take it. House wrens could take it. Tree swallows could take it. When you put up bluebird boxes, it's generally kind of a good rule of thumb to put them up within pairs, kind of within right. like 20 feet of each other. And that way the tree swallow can take one and the bluebird can take the other. Sometimes you'll get a house wren that decides it wants to take both of them and will fill everything up with sticks. Right. But, yeah. You know, they're if
tough,
he puts it up, he'll get,
guys.
Yeah, he'll get something in there. He might even get a house sparrow. I don't know.
Well, and I told him, you know, you got to make sure you don't, it doesn't become a house sparrow slum, because I feel pretty strongly about eliminating house sparrows whenever possible.
Oh, I feel like I need to confess something to you. So,
oh, no.
No, I'm not.
We've
I'm
been
not,
together
I'm not,
so long.
No. When I first came back from Alaska, it was winter there, and I'd just gone months without hearing birds. And so, I have this flock of house sparrows that roost in a cedar in my complex, and I hear them, and I'm just like, yeah, you sound so friendly. I haven't heard birds. I miss them so much. I do realize that they're problematic, though. I'm not going to encourage people to house house sparrows.
No, that's we don't want to do that. The putting them up in tandem, that was a big deal. It seemed like 20 years ago. It seems like I don't see as many people doing that now. The theory was, yeah, the tree swallows would take over one and then would tolerate bluebirds in the other, but they wouldn't tolerate another pair of tree swallows in the other one, right?
Yeah. I don't know. That's it could be that maybe because I think that information came out of the Bluebird Recovery Society.
I think I've told you my dad's place he bought 25 years ago, and we planted a ton of trees. Everybody wants to plant trees. Well, they grew. And so all of a sudden, you know, he had a lot of bluebird boxes out when it was an open area. And I mean, it was, I don't know, he probably had 8 or 10 bluebird boxes. He had his own little mini trail cooking there and had fledged a lot of young bluebirds. He just doesn't really get them much anymore on his property because there's so many trees now, it seems like. It mm-hmm. just seems like it's no longer bluebird habitat.
That can be an issue. How often is he checking the boxes?
He's pretty hardcore about it.
Oh, okay. If he's hardcore. Yeah. Well, habitats can change. I mean, we see that when it happens with storms. So the wetland that I live in now, I used to live here pre-pandemic, and I would bird this wetland all the time. And it was just chock full of American red starts and yellow warblers. And since I moved back from Alaska, the habitat has changed so much because we've lost so many ash trees. And there's been a friends group that's been clearing out a lot of buckthorn. And now I barely have any yellow warblers and I have zero American red starts the last couple of summers breeding there. And I'm not sure if that has the habitat changed that much, or are those two in that much of a decline? But when you lose a lot of trees too, that can change the type of birds that you get.
Well, if folks want more information, there's a great organization here in the state, Bluebird Project of Minnesota, I believe it's called, or there's like the North American Bluebird Society. Google either of those, and you can find all sorts of information.
Yeah, yeah. I link to those, to the North American Bluebird Society, because it gets really in depth on best practices with housing, whether you're building them or purchasing them, and placement. And I can't stress enough the importance of predator guards, too. Yep. You can't just put a bluebird box on a tree. You can't just put it on a pole. You really need to have that predator guard, because raccoons love to eat baby bluebirds. Snakes like to go in there and get the eggs and the nestlings. Yeah, predator guards are important.
Baby bluebirds or baby wood ducks, that same rule absolutely applies to putting up a wood duck box. Every wood duck box should have a predator guard on it. Otherwise, it's potentially just a death trap for the species you're trying to help.
Yeah.
Well, Sharon, thanks for joining me for a segment. We'll get you back next week. There's lots of other topics I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
That's our friend Sharon Stadler. Follow her on social media. Just search for Bird Chick, Instagram, and other social media platforms, and you will find her. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Spring coho and steelhead are on, and Kins is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory lengthened forcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Attention duck hunters, are you tired of empty skies? Let's talk solutions at the Minnesota Duck Summit, March 27th and 28th in Nicolet. Join hunters, conservation leaders, and agency experts for sessions on how to take action to improve duck hunting in the region. The summit runs Friday afternoon, March 27th through Saturday morning, and includes a dinner Friday night. Register at the Fergus Falls Fish and Game website. That's fffgcmn.org. fffgcmn.org.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit FamilyForestCarbon.org and enroll today.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister bringing it home. Thank you to Tim and all of our other guests and all the listeners who join us here every week. If you like the content of our broadcast, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions that way. Tim, welcome back. Thanks for spending another segment with me here. What do you make of this new state park, quote-unquote state park, that a legislator is suggesting we name after Melissa and Mark Hortman?
I think it's great. You know, those are two people that were brutally assassinated. And she was in the legislative body, and she was very active. I think
she was the Speaker of the House. Yeah.
Speaker of the House. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it done a lot of work in creating and crafting the laws that dictate what happens to people in Minnesota and our resources as well. So you ask, is it something that we should do to honor these individuals? Absolutely. Because I'm under the impression that anything that we can do to generate a park, something where people can go and enjoy the outdoors, I'll use any excuse that I can. And this just happens to be a very good one.
A couple quick thoughts. By the way, I was wrong. You know, she had been Speaker for years, and when the House was 50-50, she, I believe, gave that position up so a Republican could be Speaker. That was part of who she was, you know, finding compromise to keep the wheels of state government moving. Yeah, terrible, brutally assassinated, she and her husband and their dog. Yeah, we definitely need to honor her somehow. I think, you know, when a lot of folks heard they might name a state park after her, they thought, well, are we talking about creating a new state park somewhere, right? That's a big deal. We created a new state park up on Vermilion, 10, 15 years ago. I think that's the last time we created a new one. We actually lost one down in southwestern Minnesota when we gave it up to the local Sioux band down there. By the way, the state got like $5 million to replace the recreational opportunities down there. And I think all they did was like split it up between three existing county parks or something. So we really genuinely did lose some public land in that deal. But we're not talking about, you know, creating a new state park somewhere or you know, buying new public land to name a park after Melissa and Mark, which I wish we would. I think their legacy and their memory deserves that. What we're talking about doing is kind of naming the Capitol grounds and some of the monuments and a little bit of the green space around there a Memorial State Park after them, which is highly non-controversial, right? Because we're talking about existing land. You're not talking about buying new land. I think it's a bipartisan thing everyone would support. I guess that was something that she devoted time to, was, you know, making sure the Capitol grounds were impressive and well taken care of. So I'm glad we're honoring her and her husband. I just wish, I think they deserve a new state park, and I'm always in favor of new green space and new public lands. And I wish we were going that route, but I'm glad we're doing something.
Well, I think having to call this a state park will actually generate a lot more use. I really do. You know, I agree with you that this is, you know, existing property, but it's something that no one really even ever probably takes advantage of because they don't realize that it's something that they can easily access. But once you turn it into a state park and it gets into the brochures and the DNR starts to promote it, more and more people are going to use it. That's why I think I'm good for it.
Yeah. Listen, I'm glad we're doing something. I just think she was a great public servant. I mean, I know some retired Republican legislators who said, you know, this gal really worked her tail off. You know, she was like the head of the DFL caucus for a long time. And that's a tough thing to do. I mean, you don't want to talk about herding cats. Being the leader of a caucus is very challenging. Great public servant, and just absolutely tragic what happened to her. Anyway, I'm glad we're going to have some sort of memorial for her. And again, rest in peace to her and her husband, Mark. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister are wrapping up this week's broadcast. Tim, some interesting turkey research right here in the metro area. Three Rivers Park District involved with a researcher from Texas, although I believe he's originally from Minnesota, trying to figure out why our turkey population is doing so well up here when in the southern part of the country they're having some problems.
You know, it's funny. I just talked to a guy from the Wild Turkey Federation, and the southern states are hurting. They're starting to see a big drop in turkey numbers, and they're trying to figure out why. Well, you know, talking to him, it's pretty easy to figure out. They're losing habitat very fast. It's very quickly losing.
And to what, Tim? What does he say? Well, how are they losing that habitat?
Well, they're losing it from development. I mean, you know, people are moving into these states. They got to go somewhere. You know, look at Florida, look at Missouri, look at these states that are seeing, and Tennessee especially, is seeing huge increases in population base.
North Carolina is too, I know.
Yeah. And so they're losing habitat, and this turkey habitat goes, so do the turkeys. So what they're dealing with is trying to figure out, and in this particular case where they're doing this study here in this metro area, is to try and find out what kind of habitat they use. What's the best habitat for them? How can we duplicate this habitat down in these southern states? And I think they'd even like to abscond with some of our turkeys and ship them down there. Yeah, I know they want to steal some turkeys from us. Don't let them do it. We want them all.
Well, it is kind of interesting that historically, I mean, some of the turkeys that we quote unquote stocked in Minnesota came from Missouri.
That's true.
And got them established in Houston County, Winona County. And as their population really expanded down there, there was the trap and transplant program. Gary Nelson out of the Whitewater Wildlife Management Area had a crew that would trap these birds and spread them to other parts of Minnesota. And now, I mean, we got turkeys, I think, at every county in the state, right? I don't know if we hunt them in every county, but we got to be close. And that has happened in my lifetime during my career as an outdoors writer in Minnesota. You've seen it too, Tim. I mean, when you first came to Minnesota, there were very few turkeys. There were a few in the extreme southeast, but their population has exploded. And now we're talking, we've got maybe a surplus in some of these metro areas where there's talk of taking them to Texas and trying to stock these hardy northern birds and see how they do down south.
The thing is we could probably afford to give up a few turkeys if they do need some, because you're right, we have a very good population, a nice big population of birds. But I do think what this guy is doing, and this guy's been all over the world studying birds, and I think what they're going to find here is that, it's truly all about habitat. And if they don't get their act together and start to maintain the quality habitat for turkeys down in these southern states, they're just going to keep seeing those numbers plummet.
Hey, before we go, Tim, we should point out Chuck Norris passed away. Not necessarily known as an outdoors guy, was he? But certainly a gun guy and a tough guy. Had a good run. What was he, 85?
Everyone 86. Thought that he was going to live forever, but everyone's going to pass at some point, and he just happened to go now. But he was definitely a what I would call one of those patriotic guys that were, symbolized the true American spirit. And yeah, he was a gun guy. There's no doubt about that. He was a shooter. But more than anything, I think he was one of those individuals that showed that you can make it, you can make it in this country. Even starting out as he did, as basically being someone that was in the martial arts and just happened to be in the right place at the right time, but took advantage of the situation. When you get a good break like he got, you need to make the best of it. And he did, and look where it got him. And I think he's one of the truly iconic individuals when it comes to being red, white, and blue apple pie. And thank God I'm an American.
Did Chuck ever take an acting lesson? I'm guessing not. I don't know. I don't know that for sure. But he'd been around forever. I mean, right? Enter the Dragon, the Bruce Lee movie. Wasn't that 1960s?
Yeah.
What a run. You got to give the guy credit for a heck of a run. I saw him at the SHOT Show, I don't know, Tim, 4 or 5 years ago. I was shocked how old he looked then. There was a line a block long to get his autograph. I didn't get in line for that long to get his autograph. But I did see him in there, and I was surprised how old he looked. So he, to make it to 86, doing a lot of real physical activity, tip your hat to the guy.
I agree. And if you look at what he did with martial arts early on in his career, it was quite incredible. He was definitely a true champion.
Yeah, probably exposed martial arts to a lot of the United States at a time when a lot of us were unfamiliar with it. Martial Absolutely. Arts is huge to this day. Probably can thank Chuck Norris in part for some of that. All right, Tim, thank you. Have a good week ahead. We'll talk to you in 7 days.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
Tim Lesmeister, appreciate him joining us. Appreciate you listening for the past hour. Everybody, have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisline, signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.